Welcome back to Maritime Morning. Contagion. It's a new movie about a lethal virus that spreads very quickly around the globe. Kills a lot of people within a very short period of time. Could it actually happen? Well, when Hollywood generally does a movie, especially about medicine, accuracy tends to be put aside for all of the, more, shall we say, attention-grabbing components of a story. But the creators of Contagion actually went to some unprecedented lengths to do a little fact-checking in their story of what was a destructive viral pandemic. Unfortunately, an infectious disease specialist from St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto says the plot is not all that far-fetched. We're joined this morning by Dr. Cameron Kahn. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you for asking. When I hear this from an infectious disease specialist, I always like to reply in the affirmative. I'm very well, actually.
Great.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
That's
great to be on the show.
It's great to have you here on the show as well. And we're talking about this movie. When I saw the trailers for it, the hair sort of stood up on the back of my arms because I was looking at it, and the first thing I thought of was SARS.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that you had an opinion that it was not that far-fetched, it also gave me cause for pause, if you will. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how close is this story to reality, or the potential reality?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, you know, first of all, the creators of the film really did go to quite a significant lengths to make sure that they tried to depict a severe pandemic as accurately as possible. Now, you know, what we know is that pandemics have occurred throughout history, and I don't think there's really anyone in the medical community that disputes that infectious disease pandemics will occur again. The question really in this movie is that they're depicting a severe pandemic. Now, most of us don't have any recollection of what a severe pandemic looks like. We'd have to be about 100 years old and have lived through the Spanish flu in 1918, which is estimated to have killed somewhere between 50 and 100 million people. So, you know, these types of events do occur. And in today's world, where we're so globalized, there's over 2 billion of us boarding commercial flights every year. The ability for diseases to spread quickly is there. And so I think that, you know, without causing excessive alarm, I do think that the scenario that they're presenting is certainly it's plausible, and it really is a bit of a an opportunity for us to ask ourselves, how well prepared are we? What can we do? How can we be a part of the solution, not just to address pandemics, but maybe even to be involved in their prevention?
I'm going to talk a little bit about how this all transpires, because the movie opens up, and there is a character that's played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who's sort of a mid-level executive for a corporation. She's on her way home from a business trip. She gets sick, and she coughs all the way from Hong Kong through LA over in Chicago and Minneapolis. And all through this time, she's producing clouds of this deadly Asian virus.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she's coughing on napkins and on tissues and drinking glasses and all this sort of stuff, and it's left behind. And this particular infection is a combination of the flu and some sort of a brain infection.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is the one that they're talking about is fictitious. Am I correct?
No, you know, it's very interesting. The film is actually based on a real outbreak that occurred in Malaysia. It was first detected in 1999.
Really?
A virus that's found in fruit-eating bats that found its way into pigs. And then humans, who were pig farmers, actually acquired exactly what you're seeing, a fatal form of encephalitis with respiratory infections. And that virus is called Nipah. It's N-I-P-A-H. You can probably read about it online. But that's a real instance, a real virus that's still out there. Fortunately, that virus doesn't spread readily from person to person. It has been known to, but not in any significant way. And it doesn't really have pandemic potential.
It does not have pandemic potential? Is that what you're saying?
I would say in its current form, it certainly does not have pandemic potential. It can spread from person to person, but in a very limited way and not very efficiently. The virus that's depicted in the movie Contagion is one that And if you've seen the film, they talk about an R naught of 4, and that's a technical term meaning that the average person will infect 4 other people. And so this is a type of a virus that would readily start to grow in numbers. The Nipah virus that's in parts of East Asia is very uncommon. There are a handful of cases per year and tends to be fairly localized.
But it also has a very high mortality rate. And I'd like to know how viruses are measured with these mortality rates and how important that is in terms of how people in your line of work actually deal with these viruses.
Well, mortality, I mean, the first thing just to reassure people, on average, most viruses are not highly transmissible and highly fatal. I mean, we generally don't see that combination all that often. Having said that, there have been instances like the Spanish flu in 1918, which actually met both of those criteria. But on the whole, that doesn't occur. I think the key issue that you're highlighting here is how do healthcare systems respond when they have to deal with all of this pressure?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a really important point for us to just keep in mind in today's world is that although public health is perhaps, not very sexy, and we tend to look at things like technologies that are cutting edge and so forth and get interest in those, really our best line of defense against pandemics is strong public health systems in the world, and not just in our own backyard, but elsewhere in the world, because ultimately we're only as secure as a global community as the weakest public health system in the world. So this is really quite a challenge when you think about it, that what we're asking people to do is to be thinking about what's happening outside of their borders as something that affects their own personal self-interest and their own national interest, and that's I think an important change in mindset that we need to have. We're not just citizens of our own country; we're global citizens, and we need to be thinking about infectious diseases in a global context.
When we talk about infectious diseases, let's talk about the movie here, because I think we have to sort of make a comparison against what's real and what is imaginary or fictitious or hyped up by Hollywood here. And we see the disease begin to spread, and then as it begins to explode in different locations, we begin to see essentially the social fabric of the planet begin to break down. When you're doing your work, I mean, do you look at any of this in terms of modeling and the kind of impacts that a disease will have culturally, societally, or are you essentially just focused on the science of the virus or the bacteria or whatever it is?
Well, my work focuses largely on the global airline transportation network. So I'm an infectious disease physician. I have a clinical practice here at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto. And, my area of interest is on emerging infectious diseases, not unlike what was depicted in the movie. But I also happen to study global air travel and how these diseases can move and perhaps how we can anticipate their movements and respond accordingly. The social breakdown and how society buckles under the pressure of this pandemic isn't my own personal area of research and expertise. I mean, I have had experiences. I was in New York City in 1999 working there when West Nile virus came on the scene. I was in New York in 2001 when anthrax was weaponized and sent through the mail system. And I moved to Toronto in 2003 just in time for the SARS outbreak. So I tend to have a bit of a knack of being around when emerging diseases seem to come about. So
has anybody asked you about this?
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I have had experience seeing what kinds of reactions people have and how fear can cause people and a sense of self-preservation cause people to do things that perhaps they wouldn't otherwise do. But I'm not really a behavioral expert in terms of how populations respond to crises.
Well, the reason I asked you that question is because I wanted to know how the authorities would actually deal with something like this real life contagion. Do you do modeling? Do you do not drills per se, but when you talk to people who are in your line of work that would look at how we're going to be handling a situation like this? And as you said, we had SARS in Toronto, and I think that SARS was something that we saw some of that that worrisome breakdown, if you will. It certainly wasn't as severe as it is in the movie. But when you're dealing with this, or the people, the authorities that are dealing with this, how do you manage a situation like that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, management of the situation, as you have indicated, to date, unfortunately, I would say, you know, the way we tend to respond to these is a bit more on the reactive side and a little bit less on the proactive and preventative side. I'll just give you an example of some of the work that my colleagues and I do to try and better anticipate threats. So one area is my colleague that I work with at Harvard Medical School has developed a system that is called HealthMap, and it basically is constantly sort of trolling the internet and social media for news of or chatter of infectious diseases in multiple different languages and communicating, translating that in real time. We then receive that information here at St. Michael's Hospital in our platform, where we actually see how the world is traveling and moving and can analyze that in real time. So, you know, if we get news that there is an emerging epidemic in any part of the globe at any particular moment, we can then see the conditions in that particular location, see how people are traveling all around the world. And then we use that to pass on to national authorities like the Canadian government, the U.S. government, the European Union, the World Health Organization, and so forth. So we're quite involved in the scientific side, but also creating technology and linking this with the organizations that are actually going to be responding to these types of threats.
I'd like to talk a little bit further about that. Dr. Cameron Kahn is the infectious disease specialist at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto. I'd like to talk a little more about that software. I'd also like to talk about what state of preparedness we are in this country for an outbreak, especially in light of what happened with SARS. Are we better prepared? Do we need to be better prepared? We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on that. Contagion. It's the new movie. Could it really happen? This is Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. Contagion, the new movie. It's about a character, but played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who unknowingly carries a microbe or a virus of some sort. Comes back from Asia, lands in Chicago, and then it begins to spread from there. There are people who are monitoring this all the time. Dr. Cameron Kahn, an infectious disease specialist at Toronto St. Michael's Hospital, is one of those people, and he joins us on the phone from Toronto as well. Pearson, you did a comparison to Chicago, because Pearson is a particularly well-traveled spot. It's a central travel hub. Mm-hmm. So Toronto, from your perspective, would be prime candidate for a location where we would begin to see something like this happen, or at least that would be affected by a pandemic that was spread through air travel.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if we had a pandemic, you know, by definition, a pandemic is something that would ultimately affect all areas of the globe. But certainly a city like Toronto is very, very interconnected. It has a big global footprint in terms of where people are traveling to and from the city through air travel. So certainly it is, you know, something which would be quite vulnerable. But it really actually depends on the location of where an epidemic originates, as we saw in the case of, in actual fact, if we look at Hong Kong, the city that would be at greatest risk would actually be Vancouver, based on its connection through air travel and the volume and movements of people. So it really depends on where it's originating in the globe and how that city is connected to other places in the world at that particular point in time.
We saw this outbreak of SARS in Toronto several years back. Are we better prepared now as a country for a pandemic or an outbreak of this sort than we were prior to SARS? Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no question that we're better prepared. You know, SARS certainly led to a bunch of initiatives that have actually helped us become better prepared and better anticipate these types of events, H1N1 as well. So we do continue to learn lessons from these types of events and do become better prepared. I do think, though, the question, you know, this is asked quite a bit about, you know, how prepared is the government and so forth, and you know, if we face one of these, how would things play out? I think it's actually really important to ask the question for the average person, you know, what's your role potentially in the emergence and spread of diseases, and what could you do about reducing some of these risks? We talk about this on our website at biodiaspora.com, D-I-A-S-P-O-R-A.com, and we just sort of put forward some discussion points that you know, people could start asking themselves, is this a way that I could become part of the solution and not be involved in the movement of diseases? If I can just give you one example, we tend to all travel at some point in time to different places around the world. And how many of us have actually talked to our physicians and said, you know, what's my health status? Are my vaccines up to date? I'm going to this other part of the globe. What sort of precautions should I take? Do I need any medications, any prophylaxis for malaria or other types of diseases? And this is really very, very important, because if we do travel to these other parts of the globe, we acquire infections. We can now reintroduce them into our own backyard. And so this is just one example of many where people can become part of the solution and, you know, try and reduce the risks of infectious disease outbreaks occurring.
I just actually went to your website. There's some fascinating mapping that is included in there as well. And some of it deals with the travel routes that, and I know I saw a picture of you standing in front of this map, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. It really is striking how interconnected we are. Mm-hmm. And you get a sense of how quickly something would be able to spread to these major centers. So what are some of the things that we can do as individuals? And I know you mentioned one example. What are some other things that you think that we can do in terms of keeping ourselves safe from this sort of thing?
Well, I think, you know, one of the more important things, and this is sort of at a slightly higher level, is recognizing that public health systems are our best line of defense. And as I mentioned previously, you know, public health is something that tends not to be very sexy. It tends to be something which, if we are in a budget crunch, we tend to think, well, you know, what does public health do? Are they invisible? And, you know, what kind of impact do they have? We need to make sure that our public health systems are as robust as possible. So people should be out there supporting initiatives to make sure that public health capacity is strong. Another thing that people can do, just simply, you know, we often are so pressed by deadlines at work and so forth that we actually may start to go to work or have meetings and be around other people when we actually are at an early stage of an infection and when we're sick and potentially spreading disease to others. So these are, this is another example of where we may want to actually take the opportunity and say, let's do this through a teleconference call or just stay in bed and not actually do this type of work. So I think there needs to be a bit of a cultural shift beyond trying to, you know, continually push ahead and potentially put others at risk. But I do want to highlight that, you know, despite the fact I work in this space, I do think it's really important for the average person not to become a germaphobe. You know, on the balance of things, I think that's probably causing more harm than good. Ultimately, we're all social creatures. So, you know, being around one another and having physical contact with one another is just part of what it means to be human, and I don't think we should be denying ourselves that. I think we should just be looking at infectious diseases not through a lens of fear, but really through with just a healthy dose of respect, and asking ourselves, how can we reduce risks and coexist, if you will, with microbes as gracefully as we possibly can.
I just was following through and listening to you. There's another resource here that's quite interesting called Health Map, mm-hmm. that's put together by Harvard, and they're monitoring what's going on worldwide. Is that part of your job specifically, is listening, if you will, to the world in terms of where outbreaks are happening and perhaps how they're beginning to evolve?
Well, it's not directly part of my job, but I work directly with Health Map at the Harvard Medical School. And so what they are doing is sort of, as you've highlighted, listening for chatter, if you will, that might signal the early onset of an infectious disease threat. And as you can imagine, they're looking at communication through the Internet. So there's an awful lot of communication to be filtering and looking through and so forth. Mm. But we receive that filtered information in real time, 24/7, into our system, which then is looking at how people are traveling around the world. So you can perhaps see how the two pieces of the puzzle fit together and how we can, you know, connect the dots here from what's happening in another part of the globe and how it might show up, you know, in your own backyard. So that type of information gives us an anticipatory approach to infectious diseases, not to react to them like we did with SARS, we didn't even know it was coming, but to have a little bit of a heads up is what's going on out there, what may wind up in our own backyard and not to be caught flat-footed.
Mm. Just before we wrap up here, you know, a lot of people are going to be going to see this movie Contagion, and mm-hmm. I guess we want to put it in an appropriate context as well. There is, in spite of the fact, they have done a considerable amount of work to try and provide a valid medical foundation for what it is they're saying. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it in there that is Hollywood, though, correct?
Certainly they're depicting this through Hollywood. But I think if you actually look at the scenario, the facts that they have presented, I don't actually think the numbers that they're talking about are, again, totally unrealistic. So they really did do their homework in preparing this movie. But again, I don't think it's something that people should come out of the movie and think, I need to stop touching people, or I need to carry, you know, hand sanitizer and have my hands washed excessively. But really, the phrase I would use is not to fear microbes, but just to have a healthy respect for mm-hmm. them, but to continue to live your life, in a normal fashion.
Mm. I just have one quick question for you to wrap up with,
sure.
Because when you mentioned hand sanitizer, it did bring something back to mind, mm-hmm. that there was some discussion about whether or not hand sanitizer is still an effective tool in terms of fighting against disease, and mm-hmm. that there was a story that came out a little bit ago. So drawing on your obvious knowledge in this area, mm-hmm. is it still a good idea to use hand sanitizer? Is it an effective tool against infection?
Absolutely it is. And in the context of not being around a sink or, you know, having an opportunity to wash your hands with soap and water, it is certainly the next best thing to have around you. And there may be situations where, you're coughing or sneezing or something is happening and you're not around a place where you can wash your hands. So I do think having hand sanitizer with you is good. I mean, we use our hands and touch our faces countless times during the day. We touch inanimate objects around us, and that can be a mechanism to spread diseases to others. So I would say on the balance of things, having hand sanitizer and using it appropriately is a good idea.
Dr. Khan, thanks so much for joining us to talk about this. Really enjoyed it. Some fascinating information.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Dr. Cameron Khan, he is the a doctor that deals with infectious diseases at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto. Todd Vino on the line now from St. John. Are you going to go see that movie?
You know, probably not. Wasn't it pretty much already done, that Dustin Hoffman movie, Outbreak? Wasn't it pretty much the same thing?
Yeah, well, this one actually, and it's the point that they made in the New York Times piece that they wrote about it, that this is a little closer to reality.
Okay.
And that's what makes it that much more frightening. So,
You know what? I remember the SARS scares in Toronto and all that stuff. Those hand sanitizers you alluded to, those, and the doctor who knows much more than me likes them. I never, ever use those. For whatever reason, I don't know, it doesn't interest me.
Well, I'll just remember that next time you go to shake my hand.
We can do the Howie Mandel fist touch.
How about a little elbow-to-elbow action there? That would be...
Sounds good, man. Listen, Canadian music is obviously grown a lot over the years. Bryan Adams and all the rest, of course, huge hits. And CBC's doing putting together a really cool show called Life is a Highway, Canadian Pop Music in the 1990s. And we'll have somebody on, a music journalist, to talk about that. And also the submarines. We hear a lot about these four subs. Stephen Staples, president of the Rideau Institute, says it's time to scrap the sub project. So that and lots more coming right up.
And we'll see you tomorrow. I'm Jordy Morgan. This is Maritime Morning.